through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Bobby Wagner spoke with reporters yesterday and was asked about the Seahawks' 2-4 start to the season. Unsurprisingly, you're going to turn to the defensive captain and you're going to say, hey, you guys are 2-4. What are you going to do? How do you feel? You're not used to being in this position, Bobby Wagner, who has been with a winning team for his entire career. Bobby Wagner pointed to another team, his own team, but in 2015, the 2015 Seahawks, and said, well, I'm looking back at those guys. Here's what he said.
I remember being 2-4. I remember everybody on the outside saying our season was over and saying that we had no chance of being good. And I remember us just locking in and focusing. It's a very similar feeling. I feel like, when you watch the games and watch some of the things that we've done, we're very close. And I feel like it's not like we're not getting better. So, like I said, I'm very confident in the guys that we have. I'm confident that, we're just a couple plays away, or a couple, minor tweaks away from being a team that I know we can be in.
The Seahawks started 2-4 that season, like I said. They had wins over the Chicago Bears and Detroit Lions in weeks 3 and 4, so it looked like they were turning it around, but no, they lost to the Rams, the Packers, the Bengals, and the Panthers all to start the season. Then they finished the season, their last 10, they won 8. 8 of their last 10 were wins. Do you think it's a fair comparison?
I mean, when you have those experiences, why would you not draw back to it? If you're a leader on this team and you're in this position and you have expectations and hopes of making it to the playoffs, why not draw back to an experience that you've had back in 2015? To me, that's a positive. That's a positive that you have two players in Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson that said, look, we've been here before. We've been in these situations and we know how to get ourselves out of it. And this is what it's going to take. And being able to express that and communicate that to the rest of the guys in this locker room to get them to continue to keep believing, right? So I don't have any problem with that. But can you compare the 2015 team to this group? I don't know if you could quite do that. I don't know if you could do that with, a couple big key differences here, Stacy, with number one, Russell Wilson is not on this team right now just because he's injured. He's out for the next couple weeks at least. And during that stretch in 2015, him and Doug Baldwin and the rest of the offense, I mean, Russell Wilson was on fire.
What Doug Baldwin and Russell Wilson did to end that season was spectacular. Yeah. I mean, we were talking about, what was the Jerry Rice record that Doug Baldwin was on? Was it Jerry Rice or was it Steve Largent? I know there was a franchise record and then an NFL record that Doug was on pace to break or match.
I think it was a franchise record. Jerry Rice holds the single game, or it's one of the two.
There was some kind of like consecutive games with multiple touchdowns. So there was a franchise record for that and then an NFL record. Yeah. And he, I don't know if he matched it or surpassed it, but it was a spectacular run. And remember, the season started with not only were they 2-4, but they had traded for Jimmy Graham, and then they in 2015. So they lost him in that game or in that season, or was that after 2015?
No, that was
2015. So they lost him in that Steelers game.
In the middle of the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah, so that's a little later in the season. But they start out, they're not playing the way people thought they would. You got this big red zone acquisition. You have Marshawn Lynch. And instead, Marshawn Lynch ends up having, if my memory serves me, like a sports hernia or something happens with him. So he's sidelined. So you're down to your backup, and it's that backup running back you don't really know about. He's an undrafted rookie free agent. His name's Thomas Rawls. So you have him as your backup, and then Jimmy Graham goes down midway through the season. And then you take off. Thomas Rawls is leading the league at this point in yards per carry. Mm-hmm. Doug Baldwin is having and Russell Wilson are having multiple games with multiple touchdowns between the same wide receiver quarterback tandem.
Yeah.
And not only that, I really want to point to this. That defense is still only limiting opponents to 285 yards per game. That's a league leading total in 2015. For comparison, this year they're last at 433.
Yeah.
So 285 in 2015,
and
285
they
yards.
Were number one in points allowed.
Yeah.
Right? They were number one in points allowed as well. So they were still an incredible defense at that point. They still had all their guys, in the secondary. They still had their guys up front. with Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril and those guys coming off the edge. I mean, they were a very, very talented defense, and obviously offensively, they just had a lot of things that weren't going right for them. The final 10 games of the the final six games of the season, Russell Wilson threw for 25 touchdowns in six games. And so you just look at that run that they went on. It was pretty spectacular. Now, do they have stars that could step up and make plays and they could come together and rally together? Yeah, I could write a script and I could give you that if they find the running game against the New Orleans Saints and win that game and they're able to keep it going versus the Jags, and then you get Russell Wilson coming back for a Green Bay, like maybe you've got enough of the momentum building for you that you can go on a unique and special run here. But a lot of things are going to have to get right. Whereas I believe that when you're looking at what happened in 2015, yes, Russell Wilson got off and Doug Baldwin were on an historic run, but that defense also started playing to their capability. They started playing like the defense that they were, which was the number one defense in the league. And for the Seattle Seahawks, I have a hard time seeing this defense bounce from being one of the last defenses in the league to all of a sudden one of the top 10 defenses in this league right now, knowing that they've got some really, really good competition coming ahead, which is the Green Bay Packers and the Arizona Cardinals, and you face the Rams again. You know, there's a lot that has to go right for this team in order to live up to those types of challenges in the second half of the season.
Yeah, the team still was, during like the peak Pete Carroll era, and when they still had at least like one or two members from that original defense, obviously guys left at different times, but they could average around 40 sacks per season, 42 sacks per season. So they still were a little low that season at 37. Obviously, that's still a solid number, but they were getting to the quarterback. They had 104 quarterback hits that season, and they also had quite a few tackles for loss, 72. So they were able to at least get pressure. I do not blame the defensive captain of your team for, upon being asked, you know, what do you think about the start, pointing to a time when they had the exact same start to the season and saying, we did it then. Mm-hmm. What else is he supposed to say in that moment? But I would also be hard-pressed to think he doesn't also know the major differences between that squad and this squad, and that there are going to need to be some major changes. Not just having some kind of meeting and deciding to like throw yourselves into, you know, whatever you can do to fix the season. You have to realistically look at these two seasons and say, no, there might be too big a difference here. Mm-hmm. There might be too big a difference between these two seasons to have that exact same turnaround. Like, it can be a 2-4 start, but two very different stories.
Yeah, it absolutely. And that's what we're waiting to see here. That's why you look at the Saints game. This is a must win. This sets the table for all of that. So if Bobby Wagner's talking about, hey, we've done it before, and we've gone on this incredible run, this incredible streak, so maybe it looks a little different than how they did it in 2015, Stacey, but they still get it done. They still find a way to get those same results. It doesn't happen without a win on Monday night. You don't get that win Monday night, you have zero room for error down the stretch, and I don't believe that this team is capable enough to going on a run where they're able to rattle off, you know, 10 straight wins or however many they're going to need in order to make that happen. And that's why it comes down to the fundamental aspect of two very simple things. Defense has to come up big and has to play better than what they did. And they can't get down into a hole like they did to start the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's number one. And number two, they have to run the football with incredible efficiency, and they have to really dominate the line of scrimmage against the number two rush defense against the New Orleans Saints. Those are the two keys to the game. If the Seahawks can execute on that, then they win the football game. If they don't execute on one or the other, then I believe that they lose this game, and we're having, you know, a different conversation at this point in time. You can't stress enough how big this game is.
Can I say something? So we have a
you could never say
something. We have a texter texting in. He, she says, they say, I understand you guys need something to talk about, but how are we still talking about this team somehow, mathematically, with all the variables going against them, having a winning season and trying to make the playoffs? So this is a pet peeve I have. It's not that other teams don't deserve a lot of coverage. That I absolutely agree with. It's that if the Seahawks aren't winning, you just say, well, close the book on this season and move on. I'm sorry. Last time I checked, this was a team that has a franchise quarterback they're paying $35 million to, an all-pro middle linebacker getting $18 million a year, a strong safety you just paid $17.5 million a year. You have a front office, a head coach, and a GM that have been together for the better part of 10 years, for actually 10 years heading into this season. You have every single reason to be a winning franchise, and yet you are not. That's still a discussion worth having. You don't just suddenly decide that if your team, with all the weapons to be good, is not being good, that you throw the book away and you just say, oh, well, there's always next year. No, you aren't the Jags. You aren't a team heading in here with absolutely no expectations. You're a team that started your year with Super Bowl expectations. You know what a fascinating conversation is to me? Why you aren't in the race right now. Why aren't you competing for a Super Bowl right now? Why are you 2-4? Why are you with Bobby Wagner, right? With Jamal Adams, with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, with Russell Wilson when he was healthy. You've got this new offensive coordinator from one of the best offensive systems in the league in the last 5 or 6 years. You've got Pete Carroll, one of the most, the winningest head coach you've ever had, and one of the most successful coaches on the NFL and collegiate level. You have all of these reasons to be a winning team. Why are you just deciding that, like, losing is enough for you? It's not enough for this team. I can guarantee you the players on this team are incredibly disappointed and frustrated. In fact, I know they are because DK Metcalf's press conference after their last loss at home, he sounded so frustrated. And not even frustrated, he sounded mad. It was a sobering press conference. You had this guy who's probably used to winning but also knows they have the weapons to win, who's disappointed and doesn't know the answer. That, to me, is a fascinating conversation, and it's one we should be having.
Well, there comes a lot of accountability in that discussion, and that's where I think that when we're talking about this, that there's still so much on the table right now that we're a game away, I believe, from having these types of discussions and having these types of, you know, a level of accountability in terms of what is going on and where is the problem. Right now, you look at it and go, well, Russell Wilson's hurt. It's unfortunate, but you were having these problems before Russell Wilson was hurt. The same issues still remain, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and that's why, Stacey, you look back at it on a week two, maybe the show does know what they're talking about. When we sat there and said, hey, maybe the defense giving up as many yards as they did and the amount of points that they did in the second half is a problem and an issue, then... and it comes back and it continues to be a reoccurring theme over and over and over again, maybe we were onto something there. I don't know. But when it comes down to this team, the expectations definitely are higher. And it comes to the standard, it's definitely higher. And now, you know, like I said, I think that we're, you know, might be getting ahead of the game here. But what has to happen in order for this team to stop turning their you know, tires in the mud as they're stuck in the mud trying to get out versus becoming a team that can propel forward, that can become a Super Bowl level team? And I think that that's the discussion right now that I am most intrigued in at the current moment. But when it comes to this team trying to get by and get through the moment, they've got to take this game one game at a time, a week to week mentality, and they can't get too far ahead of themselves. And so when you're looking at Bobby Wagner, you're looking back at things that have happened in the past that can give you confidence moving forward, then you draw back to 2015. You draw back to those moments because you're trying to inspire confidence in the guys around you. You're trying to inspire confidence in the young pieces around you to say, hey, we can do this. We can rally together. But there needs to be so much more improved into this group. For them to tighten things up, for them to actually make that happen.
All right, let's get to some X's and O's here with Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake, which two players are the most important Seahawks going into this Monday Night Football matchup.
Yeah, this isn't going to be flashy for people. This isn't going to be one of your superstars. This isn't going to be
Nick Ballore, most important.
No, not Nick Ballore. He is number one in my heart. But the two most important Seahawks heading into this matchup, and it's going to get Ray Roberts all sorts of fired up again, is Damian Lewis and Gabe Jackson. Those are my two most important Seahawks heading this Monday Night Football matchup. Why? Why am I pointing to two interior offensive linemen out of all the superstars? Because when you talk about needing to run the football, and that is going to be the way that you win the football game against the number two rush defense in the league, and they know that's what you want to do heading into this game, you've got to have great play from the offensive line in your interior. Damian Lewis and Gabe Jackson have to live up to expectations. They have to be right in terms of their combination blocks, coming downhill, playing aggressively, moving people off their spot, being able to get to the second level of the defense, allowing Rashad Penny and Alex Collins and the rest of that running back crew to have holes that they can hit and confidently hit and be able to continue that for a full 60 minutes. It's going to be a nasty affair, and you need Damian Lewis and Gabe Jackson to play that way, and I can promise you that there's no two guys that are more fired up than those two guys, maybe Dwayne Brown, but those two guys especially for this opportunity.
Second down. How's DK Metcalf's season going?
You know, it's funny because if you ask a lot of people out there, they're like, oh, DK Metcalf, gosh, remember he was getting into, you know, trouble at the beginning of the year, and, you know, what's his deal? And gosh, that fumble, what was he thinking? And there's a lot of people that are, I think, conflating, they are dramatizing, you know, some of those mistakes and not really looking at the year that DK Metcalf is really having. He's having an outstanding year. DK Metcalf is having a year where when the quarterback targets him, it's 140.4 passer rating upon targets. That's second in the NFL. Okay, so remember what we were talking about, Stacey, last year and past 2 years, that completion percentage has been down when targeting DK Metcalf. Why? Because you're taking more risky shots down the field. Well, actually, the passer rating is pretty darn good, and you're pretty efficient when you're throwing it to DK Metcalf this season. And, oh, by the way, he's also tied in the league fourth in the league in touchdown catches. So DK's having a very good year this year. It's not the same loud, explosive start that he had last season, but so far he's done a really good job, and I think he has really shown that his game has grown from the short to intermediate to deep aspect of the game. And what I would like to see more of is obviously them being able to get and land some deep shots with DK Metcalf, but teams are being very, very cognizant of DK, always making sure that there's help over the top, and that's why he's had to get the job done in the short to intermediate aspect for the majority of this season. And so far, he's done a really good job of that, and I expect it to continue.
Third down. Couple options for this one, Jake. Maybe it's Rashad Penny. Maybe it's someone defensively. But who do the Seahawks desperately need to be a success story this season?
Well, let's go to cut number two as Pete Carroll talks about the cornerback situation.
Well, Trey's going to get a lot of reps with sitting, being a little slowed down. And I feel very comfortable about him playing. And so he's going to play in the game for sure.
So you look at the situation with Sidney Jones being slowed down, being injured. To me, the guy that has to be a success story is Trey Brown. He has to be a success story for this team, or else they're going to continue to be in cornerback purgatory, trying to figure it out, trying to play matchups, and trying to figure out who's going to be able to be the best guy for them that current week. Do we see Bless Austin? Do we see some other guy that's on the depth chart right now? Trey Brown, if he could come together, not only would it be huge for the team this season, but it would be massive in terms of the outlook that they would have at that cornerback position moving forward, because he would be the only guy currently on the roster that is on signed with the team past 2021.
Fourth down. All right, we talked about it to open the show, but the Browns obviously come out against the Denver defense despite having no starting quarterback and no starting running back or a backup running back with their third string guy. Beat the Broncos. Not only that, but he has 145 rushing yards. So what's the biggest takeaway from his, D'Ernest Johnson's, performance last night?
Honestly, the biggest thing that I kept thinking to myself, one, was how cool is that? I mean, to be a guy who, you know, his football career was pretty much over after his college career, goes on and gets a job in offshore fishing and then tries to get back into it in the AAF and then finally lands onto a professional team using that opportunity. I mean, what it tells me is that, you know, there are typically a lot of haters out there when it comes to players, athletes in general that are on the bubble, that are trying to pursue. And I was one of those guys. After my last attempt to try and win a starting job at Miami, everybody kept asking me, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do next? And even had an article written about me in the Seattle Times at one point in time, even as I made the Jets roster, about how my career was a failure. But these guys still keep pursuing. These guys still keep going for it, and they keep their head down, and they keep trying to live out their dreams and hopes for one shot and opportunity. And D'Ernest Johnson got that and made the most of it. And I'm so happy, incredibly happy for him, because there's so many other talented athletes out there, so many talented football players that might be on a practice squad, that might be out there on the free agent wire, just trying to make it, trying to stay ready, trying to stay prepared. While other people are pointing at him and saying that you're not good enough, and so to me it was just awesome to see somebody like that to go through the adversity that they had, have the grit and the determination and the self-belief that they could do it, that they could perform at the highest level. And once he got that opportunity, the opportunity of a lifetime on a national stage, 22 carries, 146 yards, one touchdown on the ground, and oh by the way, he contributes with an 18-yard reception as well off the screen. I mean, such a cool moment, and you just saw the guys rally around him and love on him and know that this was a big moment for him in his career. Such a cool and inspiring moment.
Can I just say that? I'm not even saying this just as your friend, but it's one of my low-key pet peeves. I have many, but a maybe less prominent pet peeve that I still have is when people call practice squad players or third string guys or even sometimes second string guys or backup scrubs. Like the idea that even the guy that is barely making the practice squad, like a bubble player on the practice squad, isn't still like an amazing athlete is such a misconception about how difficult it is to make the NFL. To make an NFL roster, to be a backup or a third string guy on an NFL roster, you're still the very best guy from your college, the very best guy from your hometown and your high school. Like, look up the stats on any of these guys. Like, guarantee you most of the guys on practice squad were like broke some kind of record at their college or like certainly like led their hometown to a championship or whatever. Like, it's so incredibly hard. It's the reason that Bobby Wagner's and Russell Wilson's and these guys get so much money.
Yeah.
Because a handful of people can do what they do. And as much as it's fair and it's our job to, you know, talk about how well they played when they do great or critique a failed play, it's not without recognizing how rare that caliber of talent is and how I think valuable it is to the culture of sports to be able to collectively as a community watch these games and take in these moments and feel whether a sense of pride or shared excitement or whatever. Mm-hmm. And these guys being able to do things that are very rare feats is a big part of that. I hate it when people call like a practice squad guy a scrub or a guy like D'Ernest Johnson. It's such a cool story. Speaking of, D'Ernest Johnson was a bit starstruck after getting a shout out from a major, major, major celebrity athlete. It's an athlete, but also like when I say celebrity athlete, I mean someone that even you're not like your great grandmother knows who this person is. And he was rightfully starstruck after getting that shout out. That's coming up next in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you the top stories from your own timeline. So when you see a random name trending, don't worry, we'll tell you why. This one, speaking of timeline, showing up on my own timeline. It's from Seattle Times Mariners reporter Ryan Divish. The Mariners, he said they're cleaning up the roster a little bit ahead of the World Series deadline. Infielder Shedlong Jr. has been outrighted and will become a free agent after the World Series.
This is a tragic day. It's a tragic day because we do not get to witness the swaggiest baseball player in the history of mankind.
I know that
he's
got to
buy
Shed.
All new accessories in a different team's color.
Now, for Shed Long, that probably isn't a bad thing. He probably loves that aspect of it.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, if you wear the amount of accessories that Shed Long does, that's like your favorite part of the game is the way you look. But, you know, it honestly was a bummer because, you know, Shed's is a fun personality. He's a guy that extremely likable. And there was some flashes. There were moments when it came to Shed Long, and he just never really could get it going because of that shin injury. But how about this grand slam last year? Absolutely incredible.
Shed Long Jr. has a chance to win this one in 10 for the Mariners. Castillo sets, fires. Swing out to right field. This is on its way back, and it's gone! Walk-off home run! You did it, Shed Long Jr.
I mean, it was incredible. That was against Tampa Bay, right? In that series? I mean,
it's off Diego Castillo.
Man.
Some foreshadowing.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
That was absolutely incredible. And, you know, look, Shed wasn't a guy that remained with the team for a long time because of the injuries to start and the way it ended. But, you know, you look at that contribution. I mean, the contributions that he made helped make this run such a fun and exciting one. And I think that when it comes to Shed Long, it's something that we won't remember Shed in memories past, you know, in the future. But I think with Shed, you know, wish him all the best in his next endeavor.
This has nothing to do with the timeline, but Curtis, did you see Jake shove me out of the way when you guys were going to get donuts?
I did, yeah.
That didn't happen. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know. I saw it. The House Oversight Committee is asking the NFL to produce all documents and communications obtained in connection with the investigation of the Washington football team. Again, this stems from the same investigation that turned over those John Gruden emails. The NFL, which hasn't released any other emails, said that no other emails or correspondence displayed the same level of, in their mind, language or sentiment that John Gruden's emails did, but the House Oversight Committee wanting to see the rest of those.
Interesting. I don't know what they are going to do with it. Maybe they're just trying to bring it to light that maybe if members of Congress are asking and put pressure on the NFL that they're going to be forced to release these emails. So I don't know. Something to definitely keep an eye on there when it comes to the NFL holding out on releasing those emails for a very particular interesting reason. I wonder who they would be trying to protect in these situations. I can't imagine that John Gruden was the only one that was, you know, saying some things that he probably shouldn't have said or done some things he shouldn't have said that, you know, they made, you know, that would potentially come to light in these emails.
I don't know anyone who actually thinks that John Gruden is the only person that said anything problematic at all in emails. Like, I don't know anyone who heard that and was like, oh, okay, good. It's like you telling the truth about yourself. You're never going to tell the truth. If someone was like, Curtis, are you an elite athlete? You're going to be like,
of course.
Of course I am. Hey, NFL, did you find any other one of your employees or, more importantly, any of the owners saying anything bad? Nope.
Well, and the precedent has now been set based off of Gruden resigning. If anybody else has inflammatory emails that comes to light here, they too have to resign. And if not, they're going to look like even worse than what they do if these emails come out.
What it would look like is it would look like, and there were people that were putting tweets out there and texts and whatever that were just ridiculous. But it really would, if that happened, Curtis, it really would look like it was a vendetta from Roger Goodell, because John Gruden was taking shots at Roger Goodell. And so, like, if you're not going to go after these other people, but you're going to go after John Gruden, what was the difference?
Yeah, so maybe he purposely doesn't want it to get out there. I mean, now this is all speculation, but I would wager that there is other language being used, like the language used by John Gruden, which, by the way, I think John Gruden, rightfully, I think he should have been fired instead of resigning. Mm-hmm. Like, I completely agree with that decision. I just have a really hard time thinking that isn't a...
It was an isolated incident?
Yeah, it's an isolated incident.
650,000 emails and only, like 10 came up with something bad?
All right, I got to go to the next story here. I'm running out of time. I got 2 minutes. If you saw DeMario Davis trending, well, Let me tell you why. You guys know what Jakeisms are, right?
Yeah, we
Here's a Jakeism right here.
Yeah, you have nothing to lean your hat on.
Lean your hat on. Nothing to lean your hat on. Let's see. What was another one? It's like pulling a. It's like pulling magic out of a hat. It's that's really it in an eggshell. Now,
I never said that.
A fake Jakeism that he didn't say but is a Jakeism would be, and it's not going to cost you a farm and a leg.
That's a conversation that we're all jumping at the bit to have.
Jumping at the bit. Okay. Jumping at the bit to have it. DeMario Davis had his own Jakeism. Take a listen, Jake.
The thing that we've always been able to tip our hat on is our ability to stop the run. And if you can make teams one-dimensional in this league, you're gonna be all right.
Jake, you're not alone.
Amen.
Tip
Amen.
Our hat on.
You're not alone. That's your guy right there.
That's my guy, DeMario Davis, my boy. That's where I got it from. I was just fine, and then my rookie year, I was in New York, and DeMario Davis was there, and then he just turned me astray. I mean, clearly, that was the origin story of the Jakeisms.
Do I have the...
I've got it.
Okay, great. I'm going to throw you for it. So this is my last story I want to make sure I get to because I just think it's really cool. Browns running back D'Ernest Johnson. You've heard about him all day on our show. He rushed for 146 yards yesterday for the Browns, a third string running back with this incredible story to the NFL that had a pit stop on some on a practice squad. He didn't make the final roster. He was in the AAF, and then that folded. He was a fisherman for a while he was waiting for a job. Just an incredible story. So he has this incredible game last night, his first ever start after Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb are both injured for the Browns. And again, it's just a phenomenal game for him. So he gets a shout out from LeBron James. LeBron James tweets out about D'Ernest Johnson. Johnson is then told about this in a press conference. He finds out about it live. Here it is.
D'Ernest, you know LeBron shouted you out on Twitter.
Man, you big time. That's big time right there.
LeBron?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy in your game.
Man, that's my favorite basketball player. I ain't gonna lie to you. LeBron?
Probably the favorite running back right now.
Yeah. LeBron? Yeah. But it's big time. That is.
They'll drop a two right
there. That's amazing. Bro, that's amazing, bro. LeBron James, I appreciate it, man. That means a lot. You know, that means a lot. You know, wow.
Now, obviously, you can't see the video for that, but he's. There's another player sitting next to him that's like, oh, that's big time. And you see D'Ernest like just shaking his head and looking down like, oh, my God, LeBron James. I just thought it was really cool.
It's awesome. And, you know, that to me is also when you look at Trey Brown as well. He's like, man, I was on the same field with Ben Roethlisberger. I was just trying to keep my cool. You know, it's really awesome to see these players get these opportunities and especially D'Ernest Johnson. You know, being through so much, and quite honestly, when you're a player, I don't care eventually where you come from, but like if you're a high round pick, if you're a first, second, third round pick, it's all about the perspective that you come from, right? And, you know, being a five-star recruit or being a top flight, you know, college All-American to go into the NFL, whatever the case may be, there's just a different level of appreciation for the moment. When you're somebody like D'Ernest Johnson, who understands what it's like to be on the outside, to be considered nobody, to be considered somebody that no one has even know their name, to, you know, showing out in a big way on the biggest stage in sports, and to have other, you know, big time athletes that you've had, you know, that you look up to, like LeBron James, tweet at you. I mean, it's just such a surreal and special feeling that you really don't know what to do with. And I think that is such an awesome, you know, just pure moment from D'Ernest Johnson right there.
All right, quickly, the IRG injury report brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. Again, a final practice report might come out today. It's a bit of a weird week, but we'll be keeping an eye on it. Running back Alex Collins with a hip injury and guard Damian Lewis shoulder have not been ruled out for Monday night despite being pulled from last week's game. They didn't practice yesterday, but again, Pete Carroll sounding optimistic this morning that both could play. Meanwhile, Daryl Taylor with a neck/shoulder injury also has a chance to play. He has not yet been ruled out for Monday night's game. A miraculous turnaround for him after being stretchered off the field. Now, we played that DeMario Davis sound about the identity that the New Orleans Saints defense want to have, and mostly we used it to make fun of Jake, but there's actually a great point that DeMario made in there. What's the defensive identity of the Seahawks? That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, in case you missed it, now I was initially using this audio of DeMario Davis to make fun of Jake because Jake constantly misuses idioms, and I think it's very funny. Jake's a smart person, which is why we can make fun of him for this, because it's very
great family life.
Great family life, good guy. And so we have to find one flaw that we can make fun of him
for. We swear he's smart. I promise you he is.
Look, are we saying that Brooke is the brains of the operation? Yes.
That's exactly what
we're saying. DeMario Davis, though, I'm going to play it again. He talks about the Saints' run defense, and he says something important here. Take a listen.
The thing that we've always been able to tip our hat on is our ability to stop the run. And if you can make teams one-dimensional in this league, you're going to be all right. There's some other things that we need to continue to clean up, even in the run game. But we have a good, solid foundation, and we want to keep building. And that's the thing that you're able to do. Once you have a solid identity and a good foundation to build on, that's what you need, because you need to be constantly ascending as the season goes on. And we know October is a very important month in football.
This, to me, really struck a chord, because what did DeMario Davis say? We have a foundation. We know who we are. We know that we are a run-first-oriented team in terms of stopping the run. Defensively, That's what we tip our hat on. Okay. Respect, DeMario. That is something that they know heading into every game, that is the mentality that they have and what they want to carry with them. That they are a team that can make you one-dimensional, because we are so good at stopping the run, and then we'll make you one-dimensional and take it from there. With the Seattle Seahawks defense, what is their identity? Like, what is their foundation that they can lean on and that they can build on? Because DeMario Davis also said, once you have that foundation and you have that identity, now it's about ascending. Now it's about improving and ascending and growing into that and becoming crisper, becoming sharper, all those different things. What is this team's foundation, Stacey?
I do think that, I don't know that they're not doing it successfully this year, but I do think a core value of Pete Carroll's offensive and defensive kind of identities are the run. So establishing the run, but then also stopping the run. I think stopping the run is like a core principle of his.
But right now, I mean, they haven't been.
They're not doing anything. They're not stopping anything.
So that's the part that it's been odd to me as you watch this team, is that you really haven't been able to see any identity come to life, right? And especially for them defensively, you know, the way that you would look at this group is the identity, okay, is going to be around Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams. Those are the two highest paid guys on defense. And then for a good chunk of the year, you're not really even using Jamal Adams the way that you did a season ago, where you got the most production out of him. You know, why? What is changing about the identity of this team, about the identity of the approach that is going to help you, so that you can build on something, that you can establish something and build on it from there? That, to me, is the part that I think is a huge problem, a huge issue for this group right now, as we're looking at the Seahawks at 2-4.
It's definitely a huge issue, but I don't want to just single the defense out, because I'm going to be really honest, I don't even know their offensive identity right now. Like, I don't know the idea. I know who Pete Carroll wants to be as a team. I don't think they're that team right now, but then who are they? Like, I genuinely, I don't know the offensive identity or defensive identity for this team. I know that they have weapons to try to be someone. I know who they want to be. They want to be a team that can have a balanced attack, where they can beat you either through the air or on the ground, and they want to be able to run the ball and throw downfield. I know that Pete Carroll really values explosive plays. Defensively, they want to be a team that can stop the run and then also avoid being beaten over the top and be really, really tough in moments when it matters most. On third down, get off the field, and in the red zone, get off the field. So I know who they want to be and what that identity is. It hasn't changed over 10 years. Like, every Seahawks fan knows the identity, but I'm not seeing it on either side of the ball. So I don't want to just single out the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when Russell Wilson was here, like, who do you want to be?
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. And also, I think it's the, I mean, when it comes to offense, I think that it's also, are you on the same page? Are in that philosophy of who you want to be, how you want to execute, are you on the same page as to how to get it done? And I don't believe that's been the case. That, you know, we had a texter text in yesterday and asked, okay, well, you know, is this Shane Waldron's offense? Is this just, you know, Brian Schottenheimer all over again? And he didn't even get to, you know, establish his own playbook. No, that's not it. But I do believe the influence is still there in terms of Pete Carroll, in terms of what he wants and what he wants to see happen, and ultimately what he values. And you know, if something isn't working, if something isn't right, then we need to go back to the core principle and beliefs. And that's ultimately what they're trying to establish, is it not? With Pete Carroll coming out and saying that we need to run the football, we needed to declare it, we needed to be more adamant about it, especially in the second half of that Pittsburgh game. I believe that's what Pete Carroll is speaking to in terms of establishing an identity of some sort, whether it's offense, defense, however you're going to do it, and can it be successful? And if you can establish the identity, then maybe you give yourself that chance. But right now, they've still got to work through that and see if that really is the identity that fits this team.
All right, we are going to take a break from Seahawks here because we need to talk about the Kraken. They have a home opener coming up that's been years in the making, and I can't wait to talk about it. So we're going to get started with ESPN NHL analyst Ray Ferraro, but we're going to keep it going at 45 after with just how impactful tomorrow night's Kraken home game can be. All of that comes your way next.